Still Snoop Dogg and D.I. Guess who's back? Hello, and welcome to the first episode of my new sports podcast, On the Ball with Carl Sutherland. And today we're covering one of my favorite topics, high school lacrosse, something I've covered for several years, and we just finished up another great season in Central Mass, with Grafton making it to its first state final, and overall the area taking another step forward, I think, in terms of overall quality of play and kids interested in the game. So today we have on, and by we I mean the Royal We, it's just me here, but we have on one of my favorite lacrosse reporters in Central Mass, and or Massachusetts as a whole, Joe Perrello. Who runs Sweet Sports, among a few other endeavors. ESPN Boston, he's a contributor there, and Boston Laxnet. Joe, glad to have you on today.
Thanks, Carl. I was going to say, how many lacrosse reporters are there in Central Mass?
We saw them all yesterday. There's got to be at least six or seven.
Okay. I'm definitely in the top five, right?
You're in there. Probably, yeah, definitely top five, I'd say.
Thanks.
I do think...
I've been working hard.
I do think there's something to be said. There's sort of the establishment sports media, which I might consider myself being part of the Worcester Telegram as part of that. Or you do work for ESPN Boston, which I would also consider part of that. But Sweet Sports is really one of these sites where it's kind of working outside the system a little bit. But I think a lot of people appreciate the content that you do and like it. And well, first, just want to talk about that for a few minutes. What first got you into the idea of actually creating your own website, and was it just that you didn't see the kind of coverage that you wanted or thought that local lacrosse deserved, or how'd you get into that side of it?
You know, I would love to say that I saw a niche market and I'm exploiting it, and that I'm an entrepreneur and everything, but the site just started before I had a job back in 2011. Just started it with a buddy. It was originally just, you know, run-of-the-mill sports blog. We would, you know, write about the NFL, the NBA, and every now and then we still do write about that stuff on Sweet Sports. We do national things, but for the most part, it's kind of become the home of all of my high school sports coverage that isn't asked for by the sites that I freelance for, you know, ESPN Boston, Boston Laxnet. Every now and then I do some stuff for Worcester Magazine. I remember covering the great Doherty football run of a couple years ago for them, so... You know, it started as kind of just a clearinghouse, if you will, for my high school sports coverage. But now it's become probably my favorite thing to do, my power rankings. Central Mass lacrosse power rankings are a lot of fun to put on there. Do an all-star team every year, which gets everyone in the region kind of mad at me or happy with me. Right. Some award winners and stuff like that. And I was talking to you yesterday. We were able to bring in legendary sportscaster Bob Labelle a couple of years back, the guy... you know, invented phrases like the panic button, why can't we get players like that? Been in Boston, I think he was at Channel 4 for, you know, close to 30 years, close to three decades.
Everybody
so it's kind of become an interesting hybrid site, I guess we call it. We do some national stuff, we do some high school stuff, we do a lot of recruiting, and then we have, you know, your Boston sports connection. Bob Labelle does a lot of Boston Red Sox, New England Patriots, that kind of thing. It's constantly growing, constantly evolving, and we cover a lot of different stuff. We do wrestling. We do. We've done rugby. We do kind of whatever. It's been a lot of fun, but it started as a pretty random thing, and I think now we're kind of seeing the vision for it and kind of focusing it a little bit more. And it's Central Mass lacrosse is a huge part of that.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely noticed it catch on from afar, just observing the excitement around it, and not to harp on the Bob Labelle thing too much, but this isn't just some celebrity, you know, this isn't like he wrote for you once or twice. This guy's doing stories for you like every week. This is actually getting real, like what's going on in Bob Labelle's brain.
And, yeah.
I think I'm interested in that.
Man.
I don't know. I think there's still...
He's a character. Yeah. If you haven't read his stuff on our website, you should definitely... He writes a blog or two for us a week. He and I used to do a podcast every week. That's kind of fallen by the wayside as he's traveled a little bit more, and we did a few podcasts with him on the golf course, and you know, it's that started to, I think he was a little bit distracted, so we'll probably get back into it more as the summer gets going. Now that I'm done with lacrosse, we'll do some Red Sox podcasts and things like that, but he's been an unbelievable addition to the site, and and just talking sports with him. I mean, a guy who's covered Super Bowls, World Series, Stanley Cups, the Boston Marathon, you name it. It's just really cool to pick his brain and talk sports.
Yep, and most recent story up on Sweet Sports is your recap of Grafton's state final loss yesterday, so you can find that up on Sweet Sports. Also, if you want to follow Joe, you can find him at Here We Go Joe on Twitter. another interesting name. Anything behind that? You know, it reminds me of, there used to be these I think it's like a Budweiser or a Bud Light commercial. Yes. A couple years ago where there's a dog called Wego. Now all you had to say was "Here We Go," and he'd go fetch you a Bud Light. So I always hoped it was related to that. I hoped it was related to that.
No, you know, with my brother, I've always just started a bunch of random websites that have started and fizzled over the years. I'm originally from Pittsburgh. I started a Pittsburgh Steelers blog when I was still in college with my brother, and it was called SteelersHereWeGo.com, because there's that stupid song, "Here We Go." It was SteelersHereWeGo.com. They told us to get a Twitter. When Twitter was brand new, and I did not think I would ever use the Twitter. So I thought it would be. I thought it was corny because it rhymes. So I was just like, "I'm Here We Go Joe," and he was "Here We Go Chad," is my brother's name. And lo and behold, 5 years later or whatever, I still have the name, and it's kind of funny. But yes, it's originally from a Pittsburgh Steelers fight song. It has nothing to do with Bud Light. Yeah. Although I don't know which one's worse, to be fair.
Yeah. 5 years later, and you got the Twitter handle everybody else wants, but it's already taken.
All mine.
With that, why don't we make a smooth segue into Grafton's state final appearance yesterday. I think, you know, definitely it was a lopsided score and kind of a lopsided game, but I think if you on the balance, it wasn't any worse than you might have expected going against a powerhouse like Dover Sherborne. And I think, you know, if probably shouldn't take that as a marker of how good Grafton is. I think it was more the two games before that when they got some real quality wins over Mount Greylock and Ipswich and show that they can execute in the big moments. That impressed me, I thought. And, you know, the state final, you don't want to say they were just happy to be there, but it was kind of, you know, all Central Mass teams that have been to that point before have kind of gotten a little tough love from the Eastern Mass established powerhouses. So I don't think you can take too much away from Grafton for the game yesterday. What did you think out there?
Well, you could say you don't want to say they were happy to be there, but even the players we spoke to did say that
they, did say know, that.
They were
yeah,
happy to they be there. Say that. it's a really cool experience. They got to play in a huge game, probably in front of more people than they've gotten to play in, you know, in a single game scenario at Harvard, which is awesome. And, yeah, I mean, Dover Sherborne, that team... like Coach Rotatori said afterward, they're a D3 team, but boy, did they look like a D1 team just physically. Just big kids across the board, a couple Division 1 commits, and even their kids that weren't going Division 1 were all guys that, you know, were 6 feet tall and could run and had great shots and everything. So I won't take anything away from Grafton for that win. It's amazing to me that DS is a D3 team. That's a team that played Medfield, the D2 champion, twice, played them tough, that beat Duxbury, the Division 1 runner-up. So this was a whole other level of lacrosse that Grafton is working towards. But I don't think anybody in Central Mass is quite there yet, but they're working towards that. Grafton, on the whole, you mentioned the Ipswich game. The overtime win was one of the most exciting games I've seen in the last couple of years. I thought they showed a lot of heart. I thought, on the whole, Grafton showed a lot of heart this season. You know, I think people were kind of waiting for them to fall off. You know, last year they split mid-mass with Worcester, and everyone's like, oh, well, you know, is Grafton still going to run that league like they have in years past? Well, last year was, you got to remember, for most programs, last year would have been a rebuilding year for Grafton. They were incredibly sophomore and freshman heavy last year. Chase Kapuscinski, Hunter Fraser, Cole Fontana, the attack was all sophomores last year. This year they come back as juniors, and Chase, we talked about dealing with a broken foot this year, but they kind of broke out. Once again, to be one of the best teams in Division 3, not just Central West, but in the whole state. They again have to share Mid-Mass, and we'll talk about Tantascwa later, the great season they had. They had to share Mid-Mass again with Tantascwa this year, and everyone's kind of thinking, oh, well, maybe Grafton, you know, maybe they're not running this league, maybe they're not as good as they have been in recent years. I think we saw that was mostly the product of their injuries. They were beaten up along the defense. Connor Evans was out for an extended period of time. He's a senior, a captain, a great defensive player they have. And I think the injuries in the long run did help them. It gave a lot of sophomores a lot of playing time in their midfield and on defense. I mentioned Cole Fontana. He really came on, maybe bearing a little bit more of the scoring load. So I think that as they got healthy, we saw at the end of the year, the Ipswich game, the Mount Greylock game, where they held one of the most prolific scorers in Massachusetts history, Michael McCormick, in check until the game was already kind of in their back pocket. You saw that was the real Grafton team. When they are healthy and they are clicking, they are, you know, you can say, oh, well, they weren't in the same league as DS. You know, this is a top two or three team in Division III overall, regardless. And you can say, oh, well, maybe Cohasset was better. They weren't in the same league as DS. This is one of the top three teams in Division III in the entire state, not just in Central Mass. And I would put them as probably a top 10 or 15 team in the entire state. And that's as a Division III team from a small town in Central Mass. This was a really, really good team.
Yeah, you know, I've covered Grafton a number of years, and I enjoy covering them, and a lot of the kids, they're great kids, but, you know, count me among those who kind of jumped ship or jumped off the bandwagon earlier this season. Yeah. I'll admit that, you know, I kind of underestimated them. You know, like you said, all those injuries, I thought it finally caught up to them. You know, you got to have one year where it just gets ruined by an injury. By injuries, you know, every decade or so. So I thought maybe this was the year. You know, you mentioned Chase Kapuscinski playing through injuries. Matt O'Brien. I thought the big injury for them was Connor Evans.
Yeah.
Because not only is he a very quality defensive player and kind of the glue back there, but I also think he's probably the leader of that team. Not that there aren't a few leaders, but I think he would probably be the top, you know, the real, I think he's a multi-year captain. I think he's the guy Alan Rotatori wanted to be the leader of the team. And then he goes down with what they thought was a season-ending injury. And I thought, you know, they're going to be good, but I don't know if they'll have the firepower and the, you know, the stoutness on defense to play with the big boys when you get to the district final and stuff. But obviously Evans came back, and I think that's a great story, too. That was the play he made in overtime in the Ipswich game. That's almost as important as the winner by Josh Birdsall, because I think Hunter Frazier said afterward that was kind of the momentum shift where Ipswich had that long possession in the first overtime, and you thought, you know, maybe they're just going to hold on to the ball and wait for an opportunity, and then it, you know, Grafton gets a little momentum there with the turnover that Evans caused, and I thought that was a great moment just because of how far the kid had to, you know, work to come back and make an impact on the team again. But overall, you know, great show of togetherness as a team, and they showed for such a small school and not the biggest program in terms of numbers, but they have all these quality kids that, you know, they're pretty deep. Like, I think Alan Rotatori said he was running out like 18 kids in some games in the playoffs, and that's pretty good for a small D3 school. And you know, for years they've had to play with the bigger, you know, they've had to try to knock off St. John's or Algonquin, which they did earlier in the season, but, you know, it's tough to do that in the district final. So yeah, I do like this new the way they've separated it, and I don't think you should take anything away from Grafton that it was a D3 district title that they won, because, you know, they're a much smaller school than St. John's and Algonquin and Shrewsbury and all those guys, and so I think that was probably the story of the season was Grafton. They really took the reins in the postseason and kind of stole the thunder back from everybody else in what had been a decent season. There were a few good, you know, I liked Algonquin's storyline, like you mentioned. Tantasca was a great story, but I think Grafton comes out as the team we remember out of this season.
Yeah. It was certainly their year, their first state final, and I wanted to talk about this because I found your tweet where you tweeted out your top 10 teams, and you had Grafton on top, and I thought the reaction to that was pretty funny, and I had somebody comment on my site saying that you were crazy to have Grafton on top, that they're just in like a, you know, a different class. do people not remember? Grafton beat Algonquin.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know they also lost to St. John's 10-0, which I was there for, and man, was that a miserable day. It was rainy. I don't know how anybody could move on that field. It was mush. So, you know, I'm willing to say, you know, St. John's took it to them that day. I don't think St. John's is 10 goals better than a healthy Grafton team.
You can pick out those games, though, the way, you know, not to pile on St. John's, but yeah. I think they had a poor game against Westford, I think, where they got beaten pretty handily. And then Shrewsbury got beaten pretty handily by St. John's. So, that, you know, it just happens sometimes where there's two good teams and one of them has an off day. And so I think that's been a thing that, you know, kids from either the Midwatch or St. John's look at it and say, well, I beat them 10-0. Was it 10-0 that game?
It was 10-0, yeah.
10-0. And, you know, it's obviously a lopsided scoreline. But like you said, a lot of injuries. And I think we saw, you know, a few other quality wins that that showed you that, you know, that might have been the exception to the rule rather than expecting that St. John's is 10 goals better than Grafton.
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying that Grafton would be my number one team, although we'll see. I don't tease for my power rankings. I think will come out early next week for the end of the season. But I think to say that they don't deserve to be in the argument is just really dismissing them. I think it's a lot of people are dismissing them based on that one result, which is tough. And I know they lost a really close one in overtime to Westboro. You know, I know they have a couple where they couldn't quite break through against Shrewsbury. So you can say, oh, well, they lost to, you know, two teams from the Midwatch. They got blown out by St. John's. They did beat Algonquin, the Midwatch champion. And Ipswich is a really quality team. Mount Greylock's a really quality team. You know, I think, and we talked about this yesterday, I think there's something, you know, what are you ranking? Are you saying who's the best team who would win in a head-to-head game? Or are you saying who's the most deserving team? I think when you look at most deserving, the run that Grafton made, it's a compelling case for Grafton to be the most deserving team for that number one spot if you're ranking the teams in Central Mass. And, you know, you like the new playoff format. I like the new playoff format, too. I think it's great for teams like Grafton. I think it's awesome for teams like Tingsboro, who had an awesome season. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about sophomore Kyle LaForge, the All-American they have, and the unbelievable season he had. But teams like Tingsboro, Groton Dunstable, who's, you know, going through Midwatch A, and then they get to go play in Division III, so they're always a dangerous team because they're battle-tested. I think it's awesome for schools like that. I miss the big Central Mass tournament, and I know it isn't fair to the smaller schools, and I think it would be cool to see something at some point to determine, you know, the true CMAS champion, but I think we're a little bit far removed from that. But maybe that's just because I think the region as a whole, everyone's getting better, everyone's getting closer. You know, this year, in a given day, Grafton, Algonquin, St. John's, and Shrewsbury. You know, Shrewsbury beat St. John's pretty handily the first time they played. I know St. John's blew them out in the playoffs, but those teams... I don't know. You know, on a given day, I think any one of them could beat any of the other ones.
Right, and to take it back to the top 10, you know, maybe mid-season or during the season, I play the head-to-head game a little more. But at this point, when you've got the full resume, I think you say which team was the most accomplished this year. Yeah. And to me, that's Grafton. I know you could say there maybe St. John's or Algonquin had more quality wins. You look at the list of teams that they beat. Maybe they have a few more quality wins. But, you know, Grafton's the one with the trophy. So I give it to them. Who do you have? let's take Grafton out of the conversation here.
Yeah.
Who do you have as the top team out of the rest of, out of, you know, all the other Algonquin, St. John's, Shrewsbury? Who was the best for you this year?
Yeah, and this team, I mean, like I said, they might be my number one team overall, but I think the way that St. John's ended the season was really, really something. And, you know, they lose 8-7 in overtime to Longmeadow in the semis of Division II Central West bracket. You can make the case that Algonquin made it a little farther, game farther. They made it to the final. But St. John's, they both played Longmeadow. St. John's played them a lot tougher, got them into overtime. And you could say maybe that was a wake-up call for Longmeadow, as the Longmeadow, you know, coaching staff and players did say afterwards that the St. John's game was a wake-up call for them and they put together a more complete game against Algonquin. You can make that case. But, you know, the way that they handled Shrewsbury in the playoffs, 16-3, was really something. Down the stretch, they handled South Hadley, I know, who was down a little bit, but a really good Western Mass program. They beat Algonquin head-to-head in a very, very close, awesome game towards the end of the year. They crushed Westboro down the stretch. You know, I think that Westford Academy game you mentioned where they kind of got handled, was a real wake-up call for them. Then they lost to Long Meadow right after that. But, you know, after that, they were playing unbelievable lacrosse coming down the stretch. I think that two-game kind of lull really, really woke them up to get them back to the level they were playing. When they played Grafton 10-0, they looked like undoubtedly the best team in Central Mass. Nobody would question them after that. But they had a little bit of a lull. You know, I think the Zavarian Brothers game where they lost that one, that's, you know, it was a team they beat last year, or, you know, in 2014. I think maybe that kind of frustrated them a little bit. I know Coach Terry Leary was talking about getting them to play consistently and finding consistency with his team. And he mentioned, he flat out said, you know, consistency of effort, consistency on ground balls, consistency on those 50-50 balls. And maybe at midseason they weren't getting it. At the end of the year, they were getting it. And to beat an Algonquin head-to-head, to go and just, you know, absolutely take out Shrewsbury. They beat them, what, 16-3, something like that. And Shrewsbury was, again, very, very good this year. So to you know, not only beat them in a game, but beat them in a playoff game and end their season like that was unbelievable. And, you know, they lost to Long Meadow with, what, 2 seconds left in overtime. They gave up a goal. You know, if one thing goes differently, we have St. John's against Algonquin for the Division II Central West title game. And, boy, that would have been exciting. But the way St. John's is playing, you know, you don't know who's going to win that game, obviously, playing hypotheticals. I would have gone into that game expecting St. John's to win. So, but, you know, who knows? To me, I think St. John's, just the way they were playing down the stretch, the way that they played Long Meadow, I would probably put them, and obviously the head-to-head win, because I think their main competition is Algonquin, and they have the head-to-head win against Algonquin late in the year when both were kind of hitting their stride. I would pick St. John's to be maybe the best team in the region. And you mentioned most accomplished. Grafton's the most accomplished. I think head-to-head, who do you not want to face? At the end of the year, I think St. John's was that team.
Yeah, I think St. John's really took a step forward toward the end, and it can be hit or miss when a coach kind of calls out the team, but I think that's sort of what Terry Leary did after that, you know, the Westford game, and he really wanted some consistency from the kids and a little more senior leadership and just to, you know, to value each game a little more, and each play, lacrosse move that you make to make sure it's the right one, and they really turned it around. I it sounds like he got to him. You know, you talk about it, if a coach can still get to the kids, you saw that he got to the kids and he got them on a run toward the end of the season. And the Shrewsbury, the win over Shrewsbury in the playoffs, you know, I think certainly there is a bit of a grudge match aspect to that, where, you know, not only had Shrewsbury knocked them out in the previous playoffs, they came back earlier this season in a game that you thought, you know, St. John's would be really up for, would be, you know, looking for revenge, and then Shrewsbury beat them again. So, just to note that for the Shrewsbury fans, that they had a pretty good run against St. John's before that, but I definitely think there was a little extra motivation there. But that was probably the surprise result to the season for me, even more than the 10-0 win over Grafton. To see that Shrewsbury team, a Nate Skirmont team, with the effort that they put on defense to give up 16 goals. It was surprising to me. You know, I didn't see the game, so I don't know what factored into it. But definitely, you got to credit St. John's for that, because teams don't score 16 goals on Shrewsbury, so that's pretty impressive. And
no, they do not. I mean, that was the most head turning score that I saw come across Twitter and everything was that game. And you know, St. John's, Jared Ward, Parker Jean, we know they can score goals in bunches. But yeah, Shrewsbury. Under Nate Skirmont, great defensive team, great defensive program. They buy in on the defensive end. It's not easy to even get, you know, 6 or 7 goals in a game against that team. So to put 16 up, probably the most impressive offensive performance I've seen in the region, maybe since a previous St. John's team that was led by Drew Smiley and all those guys, put one of their, 18 or 20 goal games up. But, yeah, a great performance by St. John's. They finished the season on a heck of a run, and I don't root for specific teams, but I do, you know, I'll admit, I root for Central Mass when they're playing out of region. I would have loved to have seen St. John's against Algonquin again for the championship, but...
That would have been a great game, but what can you do? I mean, they played Long Meadow great. On the other side, Algonquin, I will say, I think, I don't know if we agree on this, but I do think that they had the best player in Central Mass this year in Mike Martins. Yeah. I didn't see, you mentioned LaForge. I didn't see him, but, you know, I saw most of the top teams, and Martins, to me, was just very impactful and very a high quality player, and they got him again next year, so I think that bodes well for Algonquin. But what did you think? Let's shift a little bit to, who did you think was the top player in Central Mass this year?
Oh, man, that's... Well, I've got a couple awards coming out, so I don't want to
okay.
ruin my player
here.
Yeah, no,
let's,
like
let's
that,
not ruin
but,
it for
but,
this
week.
But
I'll give you a couple, and the All-Americans are obviously in the conversation. I know a lot of people freaked out about the All-American list, but, you know, Central Mass, they only name about, you know, four or five a year, so you're trying to whittle down the entire region to just that. And this year, more than any year, I've only been covering a couple years, but more than any year since I've been covering, there were a lot of kids you really could have made that case for. Chase Kapuscinski, for nobody from Grafton, got an All-American nod, and that's tough with him. And Kadrian Musumba, the goalie from Grafton, had a heck of a year. Colton King from Algonquin, unbelievable goalie, one of the best goalies in the region, one of the best goalies in the state, didn't get All-American honors. I'd put him up there. I put Kadrian up there. You know, he's probably the two best goalies in the region. I think you look on attack, Jared Ward, takes a backseat to nobody. Guys, from small schools, Billy Doherty from Marlboro, kid from St. B's, Curtis Vetchon, James Baller, who nobody gives credit for. I cannot believe that this kid does not get more attention. It's unbelievable. The story that they put together at Worcester last year and to continue playing so well and for him to continue to produce, he's a great player, a great story. To me, Mike Martins is definitely up there just because he does so many things well. He's probably the best faceoff guy in Central Mass. He became Algonquin's best offensive player, both as a scorer and a distributor, and he plays defense. True two-way guy. I guess if you want to count faceoff as another aspect, you know, he's a three-dimensional player, if you want to say that. He does a little bit of everything.
I
so
like
Mike
players
Martins
in 3D.
Is definitely up there. But Kyle LaForge and a lot of people, he was kind of the when the All-American list was released and our website kind of became an unofficial message board for complaining and griping about that, which I love because I love the conversation. As long as you're not insulting individual kids, I have no problem with arguing for a player over another player, whatever. But Kyle LaForge, the fact that people were arguing that he shouldn't be on that team, clearly those people have not seen Kyle LaForge play because he is an unbelievably impactful player. He's great at the faceoff X. He's really, really quick. He's got great balance going around the cage. He's just really crafty, a really savvy guy. I think he's one of only two players in the region that had 50 goals and 50 assists. I believe Billy Doherty was the other one. Mm-hmm. So you know he can create for his teammates. And that Tingsboro team was a lot better than people were giving them credit for throughout the year. They were pretty loaded. And Kyle LaForge, only a sophomore, coming back next year. You talk about Mike Martins coming back, Colton King coming back, Chase Kapuscinski coming back, Kadrian coming back.
There's
a lot of great players coming back in the region. Oh, I didn't even mention Joe Pudio from Shrewsbury, who had a monster year. Shrewsbury, we talk about them being a great defensive team. Joe Pudio would definitely be in that conversation for me. The poll that I always look at from, whoever the best poll is on Shrewsbury is probably one of the best polls in the region, and Tim Halley was that this year. So I think if you had to narrow it down, I think the five All-Americans would be a great place to start, and I'd throw in Chase Kapuscinski, Kadrian Musumba, Tim Halley in there as well. I think the top 10 in Central Mass are pretty hard to split, but yeah, Mike Martins is definitely right there at the top.
You know what Joe Pudio is? He's a champion.
Yeah, most definitely.
He's a member of those Shrewsbury hockey teams. Same with, I don't think Halley played hockey, but he's the same kind of winning attitude player. And, tough end for Shrewsbury this year. But that team overall, they changed Central Mass lacrosse a little bit last year. So I think that definitely spilled over a little bit. They definitely had an impact on this season. And we're probably overlooking them a little bit, but I think they were definitely part of that, what you'd call like the top four. Maybe even throw in Westboro, who is a little bit inconsistent, but they were definitely in that group who, on it, like you said, on any given day, could have beaten St. John's or Algonquin too. So I just wanted to mention that. But let's segue into some of the more underrated teams, who up and comers. Tantasco, where I went to high school, I thought had one of the most interesting storylines of the season. Just the run they had, 13 straight wins. They got that win over Grafton to make it possible for them to get a share of the Mid-Mass, and they followed through. You know, part of it's getting that win against Grafton, but the other part is making sure that no other, as we get a plane flying over me here. As yeah, I was saying, part of it is...
You have. I hear birds, I hear wind chimes.
I'm out on my back porch, so... I like the atmosphere back here. It's a little. It's nice to get a little birds chirping in the background of the podcast. But, part of it for Tantasco was getting that win over Grafton, but then they also had to not have a letdown game the rest of the year, which I know, it's kind of an underrated rivalry developing between Tantasco and the Worcester lacrosse team, I think, and they had to beat them twice, and Worcester, I think didn't necessarily want to just hand them a share of the Mid-Mass title, especially after how hard they had to work for it the year before. Tantasco was a great storyline to me. I think it's really cool what they're doing out there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Tantasco, I did a bunch of previews before the season, and I did a thing, individual teams at the top, and you mentioned Westboro. Westboro is a team that was pretty up and down, but pretty talented. Jack Pierce and Jake Foster, obviously among the better players in the region. I forgot to mention them, and I'm racking my brain. I'm trying to mention everybody I've watched this year that impressed me, and those two were another group. But Tantasqua, you mentioned those 13 wins in a row going into the playoffs, and they were a team that I did a story called "The Dark Horses" of just kind of a collection of other teams that I thought could contend for things. Tantasqua wasn't even on my radar, so you've really got to give them a ton of credit, kind of coming out of nowhere. And when they were putting those wins together, the Grafton win was the one that was kind of legitimizing it, because I think it was like the second win of their win streak in Agawam, a great Western Mass program. Other than that, I think they had Shepherd Hill's a team that I think is going to be good in a couple of years. They beat a young up and coming Shepherd Hill team.
Yep.
The 9-8 overtime win over Worcester was the other one where I was just like, okay, this team's pretty legit. Tantasqua, they're going up there. Northbridge is not, is not a pushover. They're a playoff team. They seem to be contending for the postseason annually. And then they got into the postseason. They won a playoff game, which is huge for an up-and-coming program like Tantasqua, winning a playoff game. And they played Algonquin pretty tough. I think the coaches will tell you there that they probably weren't, seriously contending to win the game. But, Algonquin kind of pulled away at the end. But this is, and I think it speaks to the region as a whole, that there are no more pushover games. Teams are coming up, just like nationwide, the game is growing. There's a little bit more parity. It's not like St. John's and Algonquin can just roll over everybody anymore, like it was maybe a decade ago, and, other teams would have good years. Shrewsbury would have a good year, Westboro would have a good year here or there. There's a pecking order, to be sure, but teams like Tantasqua can come up in a year. A team like Worcester can come up in a year. I look at a team like Neshoba. Midwatch A was so loaded this year.
Yep.
Neshoba with Casey Elkins and Eric Demmer scoring, putting up video game numbers, and the Arsenal brothers they have on defense, and a great goalie in Robbie Atwood. That team didn't even make the playoffs. Midwatch A was so good. They had a couple one-goal, two-goal losses here or there. They were a play away from making the playoffs. There are a lot of good teams in Central Mass, and, it's not quite to the depth of Eastern Mass just because, guys, population-wise, it's never going to be to the depth of Eastern Mass. There just aren't the amount of kids in the region, the amount of schools. But, Central Mass is really coming up, and I think Tantasqua's season is pretty indicative of that. And it was a great story, and we're going to see, I think, in the next couple years, there's going to be a Tantasqua every year that's going to shoot up. And, Assabet was another one, the Vogue school that went undefeated. This wasn't, going undefeated against a Vogue school schedule. Tantasqua plays in Division II. They play in Mid-Mass, which is a pretty good league, pretty competitive league. And for them to make the playoffs, win a playoff game, play Algonquin tough, this was not a fluke. This is a good team. This is a good program.
Yeah, I think Tantasqua gained a lot of credibility this year. And that's one of the steps, that's one of the things of, you don't go from being a 500 team in the Mid-Mass to winning a district title the next year. It's a step-by-step process for pretty much any team, And I think they took that one of those steps this year forward. They lose a few kids. They lose their goalie, Jared Muzyk, who is, I think, a three-year starter and one of the, maybe the most underrated goalie, just in terms of we don't mention him. You know, we always, even in the mid-mass, you probably mentioned Kadren Musumba, and then Sean Moran is another, at Worcester, is another recognizable goalie and a big-game goalie and stuff. But Jared Muzyk, was a quality kid. He's up there. He's a kid that a lot of, you know, maybe one or two of those mid-watch teams would have been okay with having him as their goalie. But they also lose Andrew Teehy, a real quality midfielder, tough player, and a kid who'd kind of seen them through the, you know, the growth process. But they're another team with a lot of young kids, similar to Grafton the year before. They got three sophomore attackmen, I think, and Ben Beaudry, Mike Frio, and Anthony Law, who, you know, they're going to have that chemistry, and they got two more years together. So if nothing else, I think Tantasca will still be able to put up the goals, and if they can, you know, transition to the next generation of defensive players, I think they should be in good shape. The team I think is on the verge of taking that next step is Marlborough. I know they're going to lose Billy Doherty, but they got some good depth in that program, and I think they might repeat their success next year. Worcester was also an interesting story for me, just seeing them. You know, it's hard to, once you've been, I don't know if I'd say on top, but yeah, on top of the league. They had a great season the year before, and you know, replicating that, bringing back that intensity after you graduate a lot of the kids. I think that's going to be a really interesting story next year when they graduate even more kids.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, James Bowler and Sean Moran and a few other of the kids who were on the field in the past 2 years. And I think it becomes maybe C.J. Gallagher's team next year. It's going to be interesting, though, because I think they're in good hands with Harry Jones as their coach. I you know, you got to list him as one of the top, not to take anything away from other coaches, but he probably has the best coaching background in terms of who he's played under. You know, West Genesee up in New York, and then Syracuse, and so he's been around some quality coaches and learned from some of the best. I think it's great what he's doing. He's taking kids who are just in their first experience with the game and turning them into real players and making them proud to be lacrosse players. So that's one thing I really enjoy about Worcester, but it's going to be really interesting to see next year if they still have that excitement around the program and if Harry can work his magic again to keep them above 500.
Yeah, and you say magic. I mean, it was a long building process for that program for them to get to where they are. So I'm guessing they're not gonna let go of it without a fight. And C.J. Gallagher, one of the better up and coming poles in the region. Certainly a really good player. I'm looking at him for my All-Star team pretty hard. But yeah, they're going to lose a lot of kids from that magical season. They got that, you know, that overtime win over Grafton, not this season that just happened, but the year before. They played in some big games now. You know, all the kids that have been on that team, they played in big games. They played four big games against Grafton in the last 2 years. They played two big games against Tantasqua this year. They've been to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. So, you know, the roster they're bringing back, It may not have the top-end talent athletically of the team 2 years ago. You know, you lose kids like Jack Gallagher, Jamal Bryan Massop, who were great athletes that became great lacrosse players. But now you've got, dare I say it, a little bit of a lacrosse culture, and that's hard to do when you're drawing from different schools. But they're starting to get that, and lacrosse culture is kind of so hard to build. It's something Algonquin has. It's something St. John's has. It's something Grafton definitely has, which I think is one of the biggest things Alan Rotatori's done, working with the youth program in Grafton and working his way on up, you know, having his kids play for him at the school and things like that. Schools like that have the lacrosse culture. Shrewsbury has it. Westboro has it a little bit. It's hard to see Worcester getting it because they draw from all these different schools and there's a lot of moving parts. But if any coach can do it, you mentioned Harry Jones, the guy that played at Syracuse, the guy from New York, a guy with a heck of a pedigree in the game, he certainly seems like the guy that can do it.
Yeah, you know, one thing I really like about Harry too is he doesn't turn any kids away. If they're willing to come every day and learn and commit, then he'll take 100 kids. But I think he only has 30 something shirts. But he, you know, he says, you know, just if a kid wants to play lacrosse, he wants to be part of the program, then he's not going to say no. Like, you don't have this skills yet, because half the kids are just picking up the game anyways. So if, you know, if you're willing to commit to it, and I think that's cool. I think that's a great environment, because a lot of times, maybe, you know, not to. I mean, it's great that places have these youth programs, but I think also, and you know, there's more and more kids getting involved in the sport, but then it can be discouraging if you can't, you know, break onto the varsity or even to the JV and get a spot there if you're a kid looking to get into lacrosse. So I think it's good what Harry's doing, just to overall spread the game, just to get more kids into the game. So I think that's cool, and you know, best of luck to them going forward, because it's going to be interesting to see next year. And I should mention too, Quinn Robert, I think, probably takes over for the James Bowler role, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what he can do without having, you know, another quality guy to take the pressure off. Or maybe there'll be a kid who emerges to help take the load off there a little bit. But yeah, you know, I think there are definitely, it's not just the top teams anymore. There's these other stories boiling under the surface, and I think this has been one of the most interesting years of lacrosse, just in terms of you know, how many teams there are where there's interesting things going on. We've covered a lot of them. Any other teams you want to get to, Joe?
The last thing I want to mention, Monty Tech, program in only its third year, one game away from the playoffs. They went into the last game of the season and barely lost a close one. So Monty Tech, I think, is a team to look. You know, I'm digging deep here, going to small schools. Blackstone Valley Tech, I think, is a team that will be back in the playoffs next year. And Assabet, so you talk about Volk schools, Tech schools. I think Central Mass has some pretty good ones. BVT was a power program amongst Volk schools, actually won a playoff game when the tournament was all of Central Mass. You know, it was basically everyone in Division II, and that was a pretty big thing for a Volk school to do back a couple years ago. You mentioned Marlboro. I think they're going to really take the next step. Losing Billy Doherty is tough. He did so much for them offensively, but they've got a lot of talent, I think, that's going to come up in the midfield. I think they're going to be maybe even a little bit more balanced next year. Programs nobody talks about, St. Bernard's, they can score with anybody. Littleton is always around. I look at the Midwatch, and obviously Midwatch A is just brutal, but I think Midwatch B, I don't think people gave Tingsboro its due, because they lost a close game to Groton Dunstable, and everyone was like, oh, well, you know, Groton Dunstable, isn't anything in Midwatch A. Groton Dunstable was, you know, the third or fourth best team in Midwatch A. You know, on a given day, they can beat Westboro. On a given day, they can play with anybody. And they had a guy like Zach Catone who can really, really play. So, Tingsboro, I think, is one of the teams that people ragged on them for their schedule. They accomplished a lot this year. They made a nice deep tournament run. They've got some talent. They're going to be back next year. They're going to be really, really good. And I think Midwatch B as a whole got better. Littleton's in the playoffs seemingly every year. Lemonster now back-to-back playoff seasons. And Oakmont's back in the playoffs. And I mentioned Shepherd Hill earlier. They've got a bunch of sophomores and juniors coming up. I think they're going to contend for a playoff spot. They only went, 5-6-14 this year. So they look like they're a mile away from the playoffs. They're a team that could take that jump next year and maybe get into the tournament. But, you know, Mid-Mass, Northbridge, no pushover. We talked about Worcester a bunch. We talked about Grafton, Tantasqua. Hopedale doubled their win total. So you look at these young programs, Hopedale, Monty Tech. Are they going to go play with Algonquin next year? Obviously, no. They're not going to go play with Algonquin and St. John's. They're not going to go play with these established programs. But these are not pushovers anymore, you know? Hopedale, I think they might pick up a couple Mid-Mass wins next year. They're coming up. I think that the game as a whole, the level is rising everywhere. And, you know, you've got to be, if you're going to be Algonquin, if you're going to be St. John's, you're going to be Grafton, you've really got to be improving every single year. And I think those programs know this, because you're not going to go out and win 18-0 against the teams that are in the bottom of your league. You know, it's a different game now. More kids are playing lacrosse. More kids have been playing lacrosse. And even the ones that haven't, talk about Worcester. You know, they go and there are coaches, there are a lot of quality coaches in this region that can take a good athlete and make them a good lacrosse player. So I just think I was impressed. There wasn't any one juggernaut team in the region the way that I thought last year's St. John's team, even though they were upset by Shrewsbury, I thought last year's St. John's team was an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know, led by Drew Smiley and a bunch of others. But last year there were a couple teams that could play with them. This year, I think there was no one juggernaut. but there were 10 really, really good teams. The depth and quality of play in the region this year was better than any year I've seen in the past. And you got to see at least the one team that was Grafton that made the deep postseason run, but that wasn't what this year was all about. I think this year really showed that the region as a whole is growing and the future is very bright.
Yeah, and I think Central Mass Lacrosse is all the better for that. And I know it's not totally your arena, but I just want to skim over some girls lacrosse this year and give them a little love. I think next year, going in, my storyline that I'm watching are the Bromfield girls with Soph Turketa. Sophia, I think she prefers Soph, who is far and away, she's going to become, if not already, the highest scoring girls lacrosse player nationally ever. And I really thought they had a great chance to win a state title this year after making it to that game last year. Almost puts the pressure on a little bit now after they got upset by Groton Dunstable in the districts. And it's going to be interesting to see next year. I think they might have a little bit better team. They're still pretty young, so that another year of experience might do it for them to put them over the top. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch Soph Turketa, who's up there in the region with the great players, you know, like Carly O'Connell, Devin Michael, kids who've come out of Central Mass the last few years. She's going to be a great college player and has been a pleasure to cover, but it's going to be interesting to see if she can get that title. So that's going to be interesting in girls lacrosse. You saw this year, definitely mid-watch, the Algonquin-Westboro rivalry is back on, which is always great. That's when girls lacrosse is at its best. It's good to see, you know, the up-and-comers and that depth, but it's nice to see Westboro back and doing well again and providing that other kind of team for the others to aim for, to try to emulate that success. And so I think girls lacrosse in Central Mass is in good shape too, and overall it's been a fun season to cover, and it's sad that it's finally come to an end, but you know, definitely remember a few of these great moments, especially Grafton for me. I'll definitely remember that overtime win over Ipswich will be something yeah. that I look back on as one of the classic growth moments for Central Mass, making it to earning a state title or a state title appearance out of that. It was pretty cool to watch them, you know, be able to do that against another Eastern Mass team and stuff. So with that, I think we've covered pretty much all the topics that we can. Covered about 20 different teams. I just want to thank Joe Perello for appearing on this first ever On the Ball podcast with Carl Sutherland, which will be up on SoundCloud and hopefully on iTunes pretty soon. So Joe, thanks for coming on. You can follow Joe at Here We Go Joe on Twitter. You can find his stuff on Sweet Sports, Boston Laxnet, ESPN Boston, and I'm sure probably five other places by the time the football season rolls around. And thank you to anybody who tuned in for this first episode, and promise we'll have a few more good ones coming up soon.
All right, thanks for having me, Carl. I'll see you for football season.
All right, until next time.